Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com. All right, we are here. It's finally coming to you live-ish. It is our postseason review. Dave Hendrick joining me, as always. We will be going through all 20 clubs, discussing what their summer and winter grades were, what we made of their season, the moves they need to make this summer to get better for 2019-20. Buckle in. It's going to be here a while. We will probably be breaking this into two parts, but stay tuned for all of it. It'll be great content. And also, this season, we made sure to get letter grades from each of our guests that did season review segments for their clubs. So if you're interested in hearing their version of events, be sure to check those out, of course, also on the EPL Roundtable channel. Enough blabbering from me now, though, before I do so for a much longer period of time. Dave, an absolute pleasure to have you back on.
Always a pleasure to be on, Kev. I do look forward to doing these. Unfortunately, we were a little bit held up this year. There was a game on last weekend we won't talk about, but there was a game on last weekend that held up our season review, but we're here now.
Yeah, it would have been incomplete had it not included the Champions League final, which some Tottenham fans confirm may or maybe did not happen. But anyway, of course, you can find Dave on Twitter at @DaveHendrick_, but he is private, so you can try to follow if you want. But anyway, this will be quite long, so we'll just dive into it. We'll start off with Arsenal. And Dave, it was a weird season for Arsenal because on paper, they were, air quotes, better than last season. Finished with seven more points. You get Aubameyang and Lacazette firing in the goals. The signings of Guendouzi and Torreira in the summer, both of us liked, and obviously both of them ended up being solid, although Torreira kind of drifted towards the end of the season. Also, I have to kind of eat a little bit of crow on Bernd Leno, who was significantly better than I expected. Still not great, but I thought it was kind of going to be a dumpster fire, and he ended up playing well. Like I said, the attacking pairing, Aubameyang and Lacazette, 35 of the club's 37 goals came from those two, which is great from those two, except if you look at their scoring charts, you have to go all the way down to six with Aaron Ramsey, who has now left on a free. Yeah. So that's going to need addressing. We'll get to that in a second. The defense was a mess. Finished ninth in goals allowed, which was a little unsurprising considering their squad, especially the injury to Bellerin. I know neither of us are that high on Bellerin, but the drop-off was significant. Lichtsteiner was already past it when they signed him. We talked about that in the summer show, that their signings were a weird blend of up-and-coming talents and players that were already a little bit past it. Lichtsteiner obviously being one of them, and has already left the club. So that was a pretty short stay there for him. It was a little surprising that the defense struggled that much, only in the sense that Emery is meant to be a little bit better of a defensive manager, but it's hard to outcoach the talent you have on your team. On the whole, Arsenal's away form, I think, is really what did them in, which isn't really that surprising. 8 of their 10 losses coming away from the Emirates. And they hired a manager that already had that issue. Unai Emery, over his history as a manager, has struggled with away matches. That was already their biggest issue last season under Wenger. So it was a little weird to see them double down and be like, we'll win at home and lose away. Let's see where that leaves us. Turns out, leaves you outside of the top four. They were very close at the end. If they get a result against Brighton, they go into the last day knowing that they have a chance to make it to the Champions League. Unfortunately for them, not for me, they were unable to do that. But they were close, but just not close enough. And it's crazy how frequently Arsenal versus Tottenham for a top four spot has come down to just a point or goal difference or something like that. But they do fall up short. I've given them a D because they had two opportunities. They both had the domestic opportunity where they should have caught up to Tottenham and didn't. And then they, of course, had the European opportunity against Chelsea, where they wholly failed to show up for that match in any meaningful way and got played off by Hazard in his swan song for Chelsea. So if you're Arsenal and you miss out on top four, you get a D from me. Dave, what did you think?
It was hard to argue with any of what you said. I mean, their away form was abysmal. Their defense was laughably poor at times. I think finally the myth of Koscielny can be consigned to a bin where it has always belonged. Mustafi is basically just another Lovren. And the bottle question mark kind of showed up again. You mentioned that they needed to beat Brighton, but Kev, let me remind you that in the games leading up to that, they also lost to Everton. They lost at home to Crystal Palace. They lost to Wolves. They lost to Leicester. It wasn't just that one game. They lost four of the five before that.
Yeah.
And if you're going for Champions League and you lose four of five in April, you do not deserve to be in the Champions League. Arsenal threw it away. Arsenal going into that last six games, or last seven games as it is, I thought they were favourites not just to get fourth, to get third.
Yeah.
Because you guys had the focus of the Champions League. Chelsea were focused on the Europa League. And I thought, here's Arsenal sneaking in. Everybody's eyes are elsewhere. And if they
and they've
get,
done it so much over recent years.
And they have. And there's no noticeable difference between the Wenger Arsenal and this new, allegedly improved Emery Arsenal. They can't defend, they're terrible at home, and they've got no bottle. And I thought their performance in the final was an absolute disgrace. I didn't think Chelsea played well. I didn't understand the hype over any individual performance. I didn't think anybody played well in the game. Hazard had a couple of great moments, but over the course of the 90 minutes, it was one of the worst cup finals I've ever seen. I would give them a D. And I would, again, like you, go back to last summer and ask why on earth they brought in Lichtsteiner, spent that much money on Socrates, spent that much money on Leno. I know he was better than expected, but when you expect a dumpster fire, then a car crash, it you know, seems like an improvement. He made a lot of mistakes for me, and he conceded a lot of goals. And I just look at that Arsenal team and I think there's so much work to do. And, you know, when it comes down to it, there's talk that they're getting big offers for Aubameyang from China. They should
take Barcelona them. Allegedly sniffing around Lacazette.
Take them. Take them and rebuild. Maybe Lacazette you can keep because he's, what, 26? Obi, I think, is 30, or he turns 30 pretty soon. Take it, get rid. Take whatever you can for Ozil, get rid. Take whatever you can for Mkhitaryan, get rid. Get rid of those players, get some money in, clear off. I mean, you've got to be looking at, what, 300 grand a week to Ozil, 200 to Aubameyang, and I'd imagine Mkhitaryan's about the same. That's 700 grand a week on, yeah, Aubameyang is still producing and he's a fabulous player, but he's going to decline. And when his pace goes, he's going to decline a lot because his finishing is not particularly good. He misses a lot of good chances. The other two aren't contributing anything. You also need to look at getting rid of the likes of Xhaka, Mustafi, Koscielny, Kolasinac, Nacho Monreal. All of those guys need to go and you need to build a new team. Whether or not Emery's the guy for that, I don't know. I don't know if he'll have the patience. I don't know if he'll get the time. But they need to clean house. For me, looking at that Arsenal team, in 3 years' time, there's only two players I'd want, and that's Lacazette and Torreira. There's a couple of good squad players there. But aside from that, I think Arsenal need major, major surgery. The biggest need this summer, though, has to be a centre-back, a top-end centre-back. You can't get anywhere without one.
Yeah, I agree. And for their biggest need, I think center back is certainly one of them. Although I have actually opted here for a goal-scoring midfielder. Like I mentioned, the drop-off was so significant down to Ramsey, who himself is now gone, that I just think that somebody that could score from the midfield would be very important. The player that I've highlighted is Rodrigo De Paul currently at Udinese. I know you view him more as a winger, and he can play there, so he is versatile in that way, and maybe you use him for that, considering what you're getting out of Mkhitaryan and Ainsley Maitland-Niles probably leaves much to be improved upon. Iwobi as well. But if you put him in there with Torreira and Guendouzi, Guendouzi can hold it up. Torreira, well, he'd probably be back there as well. And then Rodrigo De Paul would kind of carry the ball for me. Just an option there. But a goal-scoring midfielder on the whole, I think, is perhaps even more needed than a defender, because unless it's somebody of like Van Dijk's quality, and there aren't any of those on the market this summer, I don't think that one center back would fix their issues right now.
But they scored 73 goals in the league last year. I don't think goal scoring is the issue. The issue is conceding 51. If you take even 10 goals off that, you're going to be much better off. So it doesn't take a Van Dijk. It really doesn't. You could go into the market and buy a very good center back for probably 25. They could go and buy someone like a Jonathan Tah, who has the potential to be very, very good. They could go and buy Dale Upamecano. He might cost 40 million, but the potential is sky high. And or, you know, they could look at Kostas Manolas from Roma, might well be interested in leaving. 35 to 40 million.
I know you and I are both fans of national center backs.
Yeah,
also being
absolutely. Teaming. And then you get the two of them together. They've got common language. They know each other. I think if they could bring in a top class center back, I'm not talking about world class. I'm not talking about Virgil or Koulibaly or Skriniar or any of those elite level guys. They're just a very good center back. I just think if they could knock 10 goals off that goals against tally, that will help them get top four. Then they go and they add another one of those center backs, get that tally down to, you know, sub 35. And then all of a sudden you're looking at a very strong unit. Like you look at your team and how you guys built. You brought in Jan, that helped bring your goals against tally down. Then you brought in Toby, and having Jan helped you get Toby.
True.
That's why he was so adamant about going to you guys, because his mate was already there. Then, of course, when Davinson Sanchez and everybody wanted him, when he's on the market, where does he want to go? He wants to go to the club that he knows have two former Ajax centre-backs who speak in glowing terms about how they're treated at Spurs. He obviously goes
Shame
there.
It didn't
and
work on the leak, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just a money thing. I honestly think if he was 40 million, I would put you right in the top bracket to get him. But I think at the 75, it's most likely going to take with the stadium and Spurs having a couple more needs. We've hijacked this already to talk about Spurs.
During the Arsenal segment, which I'm sure they'll love.
I think it's taking it out. Yeah, you know, like, but I think if they went and they bought, say, Kostas Manolas for about 40 million.
Do you think he'd go to a non-Champions League club?
Yeah, I think he would. I think he would at this point in his career. I think there would be a reason. Arsenal would pay him a lot more money than Roma pay him. And I'm not sure I see a huge amount of Champions League clubs being willing to spend that kind of money on a 29-year-old centre-back where they could potentially just push the boat a little bit further, go and get maybe a Skriniar for 50 million. I think a club outside the top four who's willing to spend will get him.
Interesting. Well, I definitely agree that a center back would improve them, but it's okay for us to disagree on what we think is the biggest priority for them. Next up, we will talk about Bournemouth. Just for those interested, gave them very favorable grades, a B+ and a B in the windows. They finished 14th, which is probably a little bit disappointing for them. What did you make of their season?
Yeah, I think they'll be disappointed by the 14th place finish. The defense, again, remains a massive, massive issue. Third worst defense in the league with 70 goals conceded. And given that they spent quite heavily on, you know, Nathan Aki and Begovic over the last couple of years, I think they'll be disappointed there. They've obviously addressed it, though. They went and they bought Metham in January, and I think there's signs there that him and Aki could form a good partnership. This summer, they've brought in Lloyd Kelly, snatched him right from under the nose of Liverpool, possibly paid a little bit on the high end for them, but I think they have to compete with the bigger clubs. They had Nathaniel Klein there on loan. It doesn't look like they'll keep him. I think they had a good season overall. And look, for a club like Bournemouth, I think every season where they survive is a good season. I think you have to be fair. They operate on a small budget. They've got a tiny stadium that's not bringing in a huge amount of money. Their sponsorship deals aren't huge. You know, they're not a very profitable club. But I think they're very well run. I think Eddie Howe is a good coach, though maybe a little bit overhyped because he's British.
He's started to show a little bit more naivete this season than I'd seen from him in the past. And maybe that's just watching him more closely, because I did think he might be a decent replacement for Pochettino if you were to
I don't know if it's naivety or it's he's a little bit more conservative. I think some of the bravado we saw from him in his first couple of years in the Premier League, where nobody expected them to come into the Premier League. Remember, this is a club that almost went out of business when Eddie Howe was there in his first spell. I think there was some bravado there and a, you know what, let's just go for it because what have we got to lose? Whereas now they're established and the drop-off in money obviously is huge to go to the Championship, and they've got a number of players there on quite high wages that they've brought in. I think it's a little bit more conservatism from him. In terms of what they need this summer, I think they need a right back. I think they've got quality in midfield. We know with Brooks, we know with Cook when he gets back from the injury, Jefferson, Lerma, if they can hang on to Fraser, that's a quality midfield four. They've got good options up front if they can keep everybody. The biggest need for them is a goalkeeper. I think that's where they have to go and spend money this summer. They have to address the goalkeeper situation. Begovic was always a bit of a myth in terms of good shot stopper, but makes a lot of mistakes, overrated with his feet. I think if he was ever the keeper that people thought he was, he would never have ended up at Stoke and then at Bournemouth. A goalkeeper's got to be the priority for them. I would go for Nick Pope if I was them. I think he would fit really well into how they play in terms of how we've seen them use their goalkeeper with Arthur Boric and then with Begovic. I think Pope is an upgrade on both of them. I think he fits really well. And I think Burnley will be open to selling him despite the new contract. I think if they went to Burnley with somewhere between 12 and 15 million, they'd get him. And I think that would solve a number of their problems.
Yeah, goalkeeper, definitely a big, big need for them. Brooks proved to be fantastic in his first year. I don't think Fraser gets much better than this. If I was them, I might actually consider selling on. Allegedly, Arsenal were mildly interested, but they've shown interest in players from that kind of caliber of club before and not really pursued it. But those two were great. Callum Wilson, I don't know if you even remember this, but Tottenham were interested in Callum Wilson like 3 to 4 years ago. And everyone, myself included, was like, why? And this was a season where you could kind of see the interest there. Jefferson Lerma is just the worst. But I agree with a lot of your assessments. They tried to sort the wing back situation out by bringing in Diego Rico, because both Charlie Daniels and on the other side, Adam Smith, if memory serves, dealt with injuries, but they weren't really able to figure out either of those. So I agree with you. Maybe just wait to see if those guys come back healthy. Try to keep hold of Fraser and Wilson and just upgrade the goalkeeper. And I think you'd see a top 10 finish.
Yeah, I think a goalkeeper and a right back, and I think they'll be in good shape. I mean, I agree with what you're saying about Fraser. I don't think he gets any better. I don't think Wilson gets any better either. But I think if they can just sustain this level, and I think if the likes of Cook can come back in and take his game to the next level, I think he's definitely capable of it. The same with Brooks. Then I think they will improve. The goalkeeper will improve them. The new defensive pairing of Mepham and Aki will only get better. Two very young centre-backs. Mm-hmm. So just the natural progression of some of the players they have, I think will improve them. Plus you add those two players that I've mentioned. Yeah, I think a top 10 finish is definitely a possibility for them. And I give them a C on the season they've just had.
Yeah, I've given them a C+, just because I think they've given themselves a really good like base level that they can progress from, and they are a pretty young side. And as we've learned with Pochettino, having a young manager, things just inherently get better year on year, because not only are the players getting better, but the manager as well.
One thing they can't do this summer, they just, and I say this as a Liverpool fan, Bournemouth, do not buy any more English Liverpool players. Just don't do it. You've given us £36 million for Jordan Ibe and Dom Solanke, neither of whom are going to be in your first 11 next year. And you gave us another $6 million for Brad Smith, who's currently playing somewhere in North America doing God knows what. Stop it.
Well,
find the championship.
Now we'll move on to Brighton, who we mentioned before. Did manage to get a few draws down the back stretch, but we'll get to that in a second. We gave them a C plus for their winter grade. This is off the back of signing McAllister and a few other really talented youngsters, and we said, because I think they were they were 13th at the time. And we were saying, you know, you don't really have that many needs right now. You're 13th. You can probably just find yourself across the line come the end of the season. And then you have these kind of fresh young players looking forward. Well, if they only didn't just, they end up finishing 17th. It goes down, was it the last day? It may have been the second to last day. But Cardiff pushed them to the very end of the season. But Brighton do just escape. Houghton, of course, was a big part of that. Steered them towards draws against Arsenal, Wolves, and Newcastle in the last five, which ended up being enough to keep them up. Some disappointing results in there as well. The loss to Tottenham on a last-minute Eriksen shot after what was a very hard-fought, they'd view it as, and awful, from my view, performance there. But it was Houghton that really kind of got them to congeal, and I realized the performances weren't that great, but I thought he would at least be able to be held on to. But he does end up being released at the end of the season from his contract. Interested to get your take on that in a second. But for me, as well as Houghton did while he was there, and this squad has underperformed since the season started, and they aren't that great a squad, I don't know what else they expected. Maybe they just didn't expect to fall down to 17th, but I don't think they were significantly better than 15th. So I thought it a little bit harsh on Houghton, but here's where it makes sense to me. We mentioned that the youngster is coming through. Is Chris Houghton the manager you want developing them? I'm a little bit less sure of that. And I'm not sure Potter is the guy, but I think they should be credited for at least being ambitious, recognizing the direction of their squad, recognizing that it's probably not one that fits the mold that Houghton would want to and has established at the club. And so they've moved on from him there. Obviously, the Tottenham side of me, a little bit sad due to allegiances and such. But on the whole, I don't think it was as bad or embarrassing a decision as a lot of people made it for some reason. I have given them a D plus on the season, which kind of negates what I was just saying about how well of a job Houghton did. Because they forced themselves into the relegation fight and only just won it. But they do stay up. This grade will be higher by the end of the summer just because they'll have that new direction more in place. We'll see the other players that they bring in to kind of join this youth movement that they're trying to push through. But yeah, D plus for me. Pretty disappointing season from Brighton, and it gets Houghton in the sack.
Yeah, I mean, I think giving them credit for getting themselves safe is like giving Donald Trump credit for fixing the southern border crisis in America that he started. They put themselves in the relegation battle. They had no business being there. I thought I was surprised when Houghton got sacked. I was, and you know, he's a former Republic of Ireland international, so obviously I've got allegiances to him there. I think he is a good manager. I think he's the type of guy who'll get you out of the championship and can make you solid in the Premier League, but I do think there's a ceiling to what he can accomplish with any team. So I think that's where, you know, his path again will be to go back down into the championship, take a club, bring them up, keep them safe for a couple of years and then get moved on. And that's absolutely fine. And he's very good at that. But it was time for him to go. I think Potter is a very, very good appointment. A little bit surprised he left Swansea so quickly, because based on what I watched from them, it looks like his methods take a little bit of time to get implemented. And it was only kind of towards the end of the season I thought we saw Swansea really start to play the way you thought he wanted them to play. So that's going to be a hard transition coming into Brighton, who've played a very specific style under Chris Hughton. There's work that needs doing at both ends. They obviously, they have this established centre-back pairing of Lewis Dunk and Duffy, but, you know, 60 goals conceded is a lot of goals to concede, even for a team down there. For a team like Brighton, it's a more than I'd expect. But there's talent in the squad. We highlighted it last summer. We highlighted it in January. They have brought in some talented young players, and if Potter can get those young players on the pitch, I think they'll be safe again next year if they make the right moves in the market. Overall, I think, yeah, D-plus is absolutely fair. I think the need for them has got to be goals, though. That's the one thing they've got to find this summer. They cannot survive another season scoring 35 league goals. It just will not happen for them.
Yeah, I think it has to come from the wing. Johan Bakš did not work out this season. Maybe under new management, he can bring something to the fore. So
when you look at like the likes of Jan Bakash and people that they've brought in, you know, they've brought in a couple of big money attacking players over the last few years.
I liked the Ndone signing at the time.
Yeah, and they brought in, what's his name the year before? The Dutch guy. From PSV Eindhoven. They've brought in a couple of big money attackers that just haven't worked for them. You feel like if it clicked for them and they could figure out a way to get them in the team the right way and not kind of shoehorn them, there's talent there that could get them enough goals. But like you say, there needs to be goals from wide and creativity from wide, because that's not been at the club for a couple of years.
Yeah, agreed. And they just need to be pushed. Like, even if you don't bring in somebody that's more quote unquote talented in the wing areas, it would at least push Knockhart the others on in that position. So we'll see if they add somebody there, but I agree that they need to do something there, and it sounds like a D-plus from both of us. Now on to Burnley, who had a very odd season. They started it in Europe, and the halfway point, we're in the relegation zone. They managed to save themselves, get up to 15th. After the second half, they finally started getting the goals that they expected. But Dwight McNeil was a nice little bright spot for them out on the left. What did you make of Burnley's year?
Yeah, a mixed year for sure. The first half, a complete disaster. And then the post-Joe Hart period, much improved. And obviously they got themselves safe. They sort of rectified the defensive problems they'd had in the first half of the season. Did start to score a few more goals. Seeing a player like Dwight McNeil come through their academy and get into the first team is heartening. And you'd hope he's the first of a few that will come along in the next couple of years. There's a ceiling on this team because of the money involved, the style of play. I think Sean Dyche is also a manager who's quite limited in what he can do with a team. They had a fantastic year, obviously, the season before, but I would bet my life on them having more seasons like the one they've just had and finishing in the bottom seven or bottom eight than the season before and finishing in the top seven or top eight. I think they just caught lightning in a bottle for one season. I think they can be a solid team from, you know, in the 10 to 14 spot in the league, but there's needs for sure. They need more goals. They could do with a striker who's not 6'2" and who's not a battering ram. Like, if they could find a young Jermaine Defoe type of player, that would be ideal. And the one player I would like to see them go and try and get is Ademola Lookman from Everton. Mm. I think Everton might be open to selling him this summer. They weren't last year, and they turned down substantial bids from the likes of RB Leipzig and Borussia Mönchengladbach to hold on to him. And then he barely featured this season in terms of league starts. But I think there's a really, really talented player there. And I think if you play him up front with the strikers that they do have, and he just feeds off knockdowns and he gives them the opportunity to, you know, to play the ball in behind. What a new concept this would be for Burnley. Play the ball in behind and run in behind those centre-backs. Don't just stand in front of them and have the ball thumped up to you from 70 yards away. They could do different things, and they've got players that can deliver real quality into the box. You know, in terms of Gudjonsson, they've got Brady there, delivers great set pieces and in open play as well. So there's definitely an opportunity for them to be a little bit more creative, be a little bit more open in how they play. But yeah, Adam Ola-Luckman for me is a really nice fit there. I just think his pace, his style of play and his potential, I think he could use that club as a great springboard to get a move elsewhere maybe. But for them, the 2 years they might get out of him, I think it'd be the best thing they could do, even if it cost them 15 to 20 million. The money has to be there. They've been in the Premier League now for a couple of years. They've sold players for big money and not really spent anything. So this has got to be the summer that they back Sean Dyche.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, and I agree that striker is a need, and clearly they think so as well, because they signed Vidra, who is that kind of pacier, smaller option, last summer, and then that didn't work out at all. And then their solution in January was Peter Crouch, who I don't know if the people listening have looked at the non-retained list from Premier League players, but he's already left. What a brief stint at Turf Moor for Peter Crouch.
And Jonathan Walters has also left. So that's one of the big massive men. Two of the big massive men have left the club. And Stephen Ward has left as well. I mean, they've, you know, Lindegaard, who must have been the best paid fourth choice goalkeeper in the world over the last year. He's gone too. They have released a number of players, and you would imagine that, you know, the wages that Crouch was on, the wages that Walters was on, the wages that Ward would have been on having been there a long time, and Lindegaard as well, that's got to amount to a substantial amount per year that they could turn into, you know, a new player to bring in. They held on to Tarkowski last year. They probably shouldn't have. They won't get the same kind of offers this summer. He's likely to stay. They bought Ben Gibson last summer. They've got to just... Ben Mee had a terrible season. The hype over him last season, he believed all his own hype as well and started asking to leave. Had himself a stinker of a year. So hopefully he settles down next year and gets back to being what Ben Mee can be. But I just think they've got to find a way, because they've got good ball players. There's good ball players in their midfield. Like Cousin Jeff is a very good midfielder. But they just need that striker with something different. And you're right, Vidra was the one they went for. But Vidra has always done really well in the Championship and struggled in the Premier League over his career. I think Luckman's the one.
Yeah, that would definitely benefit them there. What was your grade for them?
A C-.
Yeah, I've gone with the same. It's eerie how frequently we label the same things, but it should not be a surprise to anyone listening to this now. Next up, I have the unenviable task of discussing Cardiff City's season for a grade. I've given them a NA, not applicable, just like we did for the winter grade, because if things go differently off the pitch, what happens with Cardiff might not happen. We mentioned how close they were to Brighton. Of course, the tragedy of Emiliano Salah, if he comes in, he avoids that tragedy. Would he have provided the goals for them to get above of Brighton? And the answer is probably. To the side of that, in the summer show, we discussed how their transfer activity was awful from a Premier League perspective, but terrific from a Championship one. It legitimately looked like they were just trying to bolster themselves with their Premier League clout to get in all these good championship players for when they go back down. And so for that reason, we gave it I listed it as a D for the Premier League and a B plus for the EFL. And that ends up being what happens for them clearly. Obviously on the season, things could have gone way different. Mentioned the tragedy, of course. Also, I'm sure people will recall the Chelsea result where they just got absolutely jobbed by the referees. If that's a win, then, you know, then they're in the leading spot versus Brighton down the stretch, which obviously could have seen things go a little bit differently. The injury to Bamba in defense really hurt them. I think Etheridge, though, covered himself in glory in his year in the Premier League, might get another chance with somebody to kind of back up in the Premier League. But he did well, made a lot of penalty saves, maybe the most in the league. Oh. At one point, that was true. I don't know if it ended that way. But it must be said, it's hard to remember a side that's gone down recently with so few players that have a chance at being picked up by other Premier League clubs. Like, who else at that club would anyone be interested if you were running a lower half club?
Nobody. Etheridge is the one. And, you know, I mentioned Bournemouth needing a goalkeeper, and he'll be an option for them. He is the only one that looked like a Premier League player to me last season. Saul Bamba had games where he looked good, and then he had games where he looked like he'd won a raffle. they shopped to be a championship club. Salah was their big swing, and it was the big swing for the fences. And unfortunately, what happened, and it's one of the more, you know, horrendous things that we've ever seen. And the behavior of the club afterwards, in refusing to pay the fees and stuff, I'm quite glad they're gone. And also, as a person who's not carved out of gammon, I'm very happy to see Neil Warnock relegated. The more Neil Warnock relegations, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I would say this summer they need a new manager, because I would fire him just because I don't like him. But I think in terms of players, one or two more of the same kind of caliber, what they've got.
They're kind of set up well.
That's it. The like you say, there's not many of those players that are going to get picked off by Premier League clubs. And if they, you know, they're going to have a bit of money to spend, and if they're willing to spend it, I could see them making a good old go coming straight back up. So for me, the biggest need is just sack Neil Warnock.
Not to foreshadow too much, but genuine question. Who do you think are more set up to succeed in the championship next season, Fulham or Cardiff?
Cardiff.
Agreed.
Definitely.
Like I said, we'll get to that in a little bit. Next up, we'll head into Chelsea. They have a twisty-turny season, which is a developing trend from the Premier League this season. They almost get rid of Sarri midway through the campaign. They're so tired of everything that he's done to the club. The football's awful. And look, there they are in third and win a European trophy via the Europa League, thereby achieving both of their objectives from the start of the season. What did you make of that campaign?
Yeah, it's hard to call their league season a success, even though they did finish in third. Their points total wouldn't have gotten them top four last season. So for me, I think that the league, from a league point of view, it's disappointing for a squad of that caliber. But obviously the Europa League does need to be factored in. They did win it. I think they're in a bad spot, though. If this transfer ban gets upheld, I do think Chelsea are in a bad spot, because as we know, Eden Hazard has now left the club and is going to Real Madrid. That's their best player. They do have Christian Pulisic coming in, and he's very, very good, but he's not anywhere close to the same level. Ruben Loftus-Cheek is most likely out for the entirety of next season. Callum Hudson-Odoi is most likely out for the entirety of next season. And Reece James, the right back?
Yeah, messed up his ankle. Not broken, though, apparently.
No, but it looked wrecked. It looked like there's some serious ligament damage to that boy's ankle. So he's going to be out for a while. They don't seem to want to keep Kovacic, so that's fine. He's on his way. I think we'll see Sarri leave in the next couple of weeks and take up the Juventus job. I could see N'Golo Kante wanting to go. And if they can't replace Hazard and they can't replace Kante.
They replaced Kante last summer.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they're in a tough spot. Even if they can buy, I don't trust them to buy well because of what we've seen for the last, like, how many times have you said it, Kev? They bought a lot of players for a lot of money and they're worse than the players that they sold for less money. You know,
Like five of the last six windows.
Yeah. So, you know, what's going to change that this summer? Like, I don't see any structural changes really that are going to make a huge difference. The decisions are still being made by someone who doesn't have any knowledge of football. She's a great businesswoman, but she's no knowledge of football. So I think they're in a tough spot. And the other thing is, if they have a transfer ban and Eden Hazard is gone and N'Golo Kante forced his way out, what manager's going to want to go in? Knowing the history of the Roman Abramovich.
Do you not think it's just Lampard?
If it is Frank, I mean, I hope it is. As a Liverpool fan, I really, really hope it's Frank Lampard. But if I'm a Chelsea fan and I don't have the blue tinted specs on and I'm not wearing my Frank Lampard full kit, you know, with my hat, I don't want Frank Lampard as the manager of my football club if I'm a top team. Because what's he got to show that he's good enough? One season with Derby where he scraped his way into the playoffs and then bottled the playoff final. Tactically inept. Got by having probably two of the best players in the championship last year with Wilson and Mount, who he won't have next year.
Right.
I just don't think he's anywhere. No, don't get me wrong. I think he's proven so far that he's a better manager than Steven Gerrard is so far, based on what I've seen of Gerrard at Rangers. But if this was the roles reversed and people were saying Jurgen Klopp is going to leave and Liverpool are going to get Steven Gerrard, I would be apoplectic, Kev. I would be absolutely spitting fire. I think it's a horrendous idea. So away with them. Hope they do it.
Yeah.
C for the season, D for the Premier League campaign, but B for the Europa League. So I'll give them a C as an average.
Yeah. I went on a bit of a Twitter tirade the day that the ban was announced. Of course, we're still going through all the appeals and reviews of that situation through CAS, but I said at the time that I actually thought it would be good for them long term, in so much as, you know, give Callum Hudson-Odoi and Ruben Loftus-Cheek a whole season, bring Ampadu into the starting team, just kind of see what you have in all those players, and then move forward from there. They've had those seasons where they've dipped down to what was the post title year? They dropped to like 7th or 9th. I don't remember.
9th, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So they have done it with a far more established squad. I think it would be so much more forgivable if they dropped out of the top six entirely, but it was while in the pursuit of seeing what they have in these young players, if they have this transfer ban, instead of kind of playing your senior players, don't play Willie and sell him to whoever's still going to offer like $35 million for him for no freaking reason. But like you mentioned, the injuries are a concern. I don't know if they're all out as long as you're saying, although I admit that.
If it's a torn Achilles.
Yeah.
Based on.
But you're saying, if you're saying that maybe 1 or 2 months is still missing the whole season, then yeah, you're probably right. But I don't think they'd all be absent the whole time. But still, I mean, your point remains that that is no longer really an option of just roll with what you have. Especially, I don't think N'Golo Kante leaves. But if he did, all of a sudden you go from having far too many central midfielders to not enough, which would be weird. You'd have Barclay and Jorginho. Who do you play next to him? Is Drinkwater going to come back into the team? Right, exactly. So I do think that those injuries to the young players, for Chelsea, awful. Also just for football fans, I think it would have been really fun, even though I despise them with every fiber of my being, it would have been really interesting to see what that elite level of youth talent could actually do. With a team of a lot of them. I mean, we loosely saw it with Leicester, but most of their prospects aren't nearly as highly touted as this Chelsea crew were. Like, Madison's fantastic, but we've been hearing about Hudson-Odoi for 2 years. We've been hearing about Loftus-Cheek for 3. So I just thought that would have been interesting. Without those young players, because of the injuries, things start to look really bad really quickly, because you're clearly going to have a divided locker room of like the Azpilicuetas and the Luises who have been there through all of the ups and downs, through all of the trophies and and then this kind of like young group that feels they need to prove it themselves.
And here's the thing. There has been a bad vibe in that dressing room for years now. There's been
They might take that and make one of them the manager.
Well, possibly, but there's been far too much player power there. And the likes of Lampard are to blame for it. Lampard, Terry and Drogba, that era.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when they were still there, Azpilicueta and a couple of others arrived. And they took that up and thought, well, that's the way players behave here, so we're going to do the same. Eden Hazard as well, the prima donna that he was. All this type of thing, players just quitting on the manager, not being bothered to play, taking basically entire seasons off in the case of Hazard and Courtois. That then fed into the likes of Kepa, who we saw what he did in the Carabao Cup final, where he shouldn't have played for the rest of the season. He should have just been binned off for the rest of the season and told to go train with the under-15s or something until he learns some manners. But that is inbred now in that club. That is in the fibre of that club. And the only way to get rid of it is to get rid of all of those players. So the rebuild was what they needed, because there is the talent there. If you look at the young players that they have, James at right back, Ampadu and Christensen as centre backs, Hudson-Odoi in attack, Pulisic coming in attack, Loftus-Cheek in midfield. Like there's players there to start building something around. They must have 40 players on loan over the last year. Now, I know those rules are going to change. So again, they're either going to have to sell a bunch of players, or they're going to have to start integrating those players into the first team squad. If it was me, I would want to see them sell off the, you know, the over earning.
Would you still do that with the transfer ban?
Yes.
Okay.
Even more so with the transfer ban, because now you're forced to play them. Now you have to play them. You don't have the escape clause. You don't have the, okay, we've tried it for 2 weeks, it hasn't worked, let's all panic, flap our arms, and let's go spend 80 million on this guy over here who had one good game. Now you have to stick with Hudson-Odoi for the season. You have to stick with Loftus-Cheek as your attacking or midfielder or centre midfielder for the season. You have to do it. You have to stick with Ampadu and Christensen as a centre-back pairing, even if they're making mistakes. You can't just go and lob another 40 million at whoever the next David Luiz or Antonio Rudiger is. You have to stick with them and let them play through the mistakes, and eventually they will get past that point, and then you will start to reap the rewards from the obscene levels of talent that those four players I've mentioned have, five if you include James. There's so much talent in that under contract with Chelsea. It's actually quite scary how much talent they have.
Mm-hmm.
The question is whether Roman Abramovich has the patience to say, okay, you know what? Going to get a manager in, going to give him 3 years to completely rebuild and just change the culture of the club. And in that fourth year, then after that, then the pressure goes back on. Then we're back on it. You know, Champions League is the minimum qualification and you've got to win us some silverware. And I think if you go to any manager, any good, if you went to, say you went to the Ajax manager and with that plan of, look, come to Chelsea, we give you a 5-year contract, you're guaranteed your contract. We guarantee you will get 4 years of work from us. We will not fire you. As long as we see signs of progress and as long as we see signs that you're changing the culture. Because here's the thing, Kev. Outside of Lampard, Terry and Drogba, I mean, there's no, and Hazard is the only one that comes close, obviously, in recent years, but there's no kind of definitive Chelsea player. There's no Steven Gerrard. There's no Harry Kane since John Terry came through, which is a long, long time ago. We have Trent, you have Kane, players from the academy. There's no definitive Chelsea style of play. There's no culture at the club. Everything is season to season and even week to week at times. It's just so up in the air. I just think for them to make a proper fundamental change, because you look at City, who started their, you know, quote-unquote project a good 6 years after Abramovich arrived in England, maybe 7 years after Abramovich arrived in England. But City have a defined culture. They have an academy that regularly produces players who make it into the first team squad. Phil Foden is the most recent one, but they've also sold a lot of academy players for huge money. I just don't see what Chelsea have done that sets them up for the long term. If the owners walked away from City tomorrow, yes, it would sting, but there's already a great team in place and the academy is loaded with incredible young players who have a defined pathway to the first team or to other clubs. At Chelsea, there's just this rut of, they have this incredible academy, but once players pass like winning the FA Youth Cup kind of level, then where do they go? There seems to just be players at Chelsea who go on continuous loans for years and years and years and years. I've seen guys at Chelsea have like 8-9 loans. Like, that's appalling for a player's progression. There just doesn't seem to be a plan.
Yeah.
So for me, the biggest need for Chelsea this summer is go and find yourselves an actual plan. Find someone to put a plan in place and aim towards that and make that your future. Because I don't know what the future of Chelsea Football Club is. I don't think anyone that works for Chelsea does. I know what the future for my club is. I can see the future for your club, for City. I can even see it for United, as much of a mess as they're in. But for Chelsea, I can't see it. And I don't know what it is.
Yeah, like you said, it's just an identity issue. I've given them a C minus. I weighted their Europa League win just a little bit more, but kind of the same vein there for me as well. Moving on now to Crystal Palace, we'll just start off. I just gave them a flat C. I think they did what they were supposed to do, nothing more, nothing less. I maybe would have expected them to finish top half at the start of the season, but finishing 12th, they were still just 3 points shy of 10th. So a result different. I mean, that's not too crazy over a 38-week season. I think Zaha stepped up a lot in terms of the goal scoring this year, career high 10 for him. Milivojevic, who scored a lot of goals, and so like he started to kind of gather a following, especially in the fantasy community this season. He did so much more than that. I think that's really important to point out. He did all of the defensive duties he was doing last year, and then also did most of the creative duties left by the void of Kabay that was supposed to be replaced by Max Meyer, but then that didn't really work out at all. So Milivojevic basically played the roles of two people in midfield, much like Conte did at Leicester. And he was phenomenal for the most part doing it. And I spoke to some Palace fans midseason, and they didn't think that Milivojevic was doing that well. And I realized that football isn't all about stats, but he was like top 10 in almost every statistic. And it was like, this is ridiculous. The only other player with kind of a similar profile, but not nearly as well-rounded is Aaron Moy, who creates chances and has loads of tackles as well. But anyway, I thought Milivojevic had a very good season as well. And then also, as you and I were talking about before we hit record, the emergence of Juan Bissaka as one of the better right-backs in the league had to be of great delight to Crystal Palace. I know you would prefer Trent, I'm sure. Leicester might be able to argue preferring Pereira. But outside of that, is there a club that would rather have their right-back than Juan Bissaka?
No, I don't think so. And I would say that defensively, he's better than Trent. Trent is just a better footballer than him. And the same with Pereira. Wan-Bissaka defensively is the best right back in England. Mm. And I don't think it's actually all that close.
Yeah, so he was obviously fantastic. So if you hear all those positives, you're probably thinking, well, why didn't Palace do better? It's because they had just as many negatives. Injuries continued with their center backs. It's always bound to happen when it's Sakho and Tompkins, both of whom already had injury histories before arriving at the club. But those two strike. Benteke has injuries and then comes back and manages one goal and one assist on the whole season. Max Meyer comes in. He's involved in just one goal the whole second half of the season. Those all did not go very well at all. I think it's personally probably time for them to move on from Van Aanholt as a left back. I will say that the positive for Crystal Palace, and this is something, actually, we spoke about Bournemouth earlier. This is something Bournemouth should aspire to. Crystal Palace have not engaged in player churn the way the rest of the Premier League has. They get players that are at their level, and then they keep them till they're done. Like, yeah. Andros Townsend needed to move on from Tottenham. He wasn't good enough there. He is the exact level of a club like Crystal Palace. Same with Dan and Kelly. Obviously, Speroni for a while. Hennessy, I don't really want to talk about it, but they improved with Gaeta this year. But just a lot of those players are at this level. I think this is Milivojevic's level. You know what I mean? Like, I just feel like they don't have the players that are bad enough that they have to leave. I don't think they're good enough that they're going to get bought out. I just think that they've done a very good job cultivating that. Now, of course, this season, they will obviously receive bids for Zaha and Wan-Bissaka, but the latter said he wants to stay. And historically, if a player tells Crystal Palace he wants to stay, their price tag becomes ridiculous.
Yes.
Like Zaha, when people were like, he'll cost $75 million, and everyone was like, no, that's okay. We'll just look at all of our other targets.
Yeah, we'll look at the 50 players better than him who'll cost half of that.
Right.
Because Zaha's a good player.
Yeah.
But that's what he is. He's a good player. He's not a great player. Like you say, Wan-Bissaka, the price for him will be off the scale this summer. So
and it might have been lower, but he told them he wants to stay.
The only other one who I would say is better than Crystal Palace is Mamadou Sakho, but the injuries are the reason he will probably end up staying there.
Yeah, it's just the junior version of Ledley King at Tottenham.
Yeah. But yeah, you're totally right in what you say. I mean, look, they did what was expected of them because that's what Roy Hodgson does, and he doesn't do anything more than that. They should have been top 10, I think, but 12th and 3 points off, Hodgie will accept that. So Hodgie will give himself an A on the season because, you know, Hodgie thinks very highly of himself. I would agree with you. I would say kind of C to C minus. But they're just a funny club. They do need work this summer. There's going to be areas need to, you know, to sort out. But they'll probably end up keeping Zaha because nobody in the right mind will pay that kind of money for him. They'll keep Wan-Bissaka because, again, nobody's going to pay $400 million for a right back or whatever it is they'll ask for. I agree with you again on Van Aanholt. Now, here's the thing. I would take him at Liverpool as our backup left back.
He'd be a great backup option.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's obviously close friends with Virgil and with Ginny. He seemed to be very keen on supporting Liverpool in the Champions League final as well, which wins brownie points with me. So, yeah, I mean, but for them, I think they do need to move on. He's probably on pretty high wages there as well.
Yeah, I imagine. Although if they lose him, then they'll stop relegating teams. I'm sure you saw that stat where it's like they've relegated at least one team the last five seasons and he scored in four of them. Just like, what a weird, weird thing to keep happening. I do think if they did lose Zaha or Wan-Bissaka, fans would look back on the season as more of a failure because when you have two players at that level, if you don't do anything with it, it kind of feels like a waste. But it's not like Crystal Palace were expecting to lift silverware this year. But just like we were saying, maybe they should have done a little bit better, but circumstances prevented it and their manager kind of prevented it.
You have to credit them in that they've gone and they've spent money. Like they spent a lot of money on Benteke.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was right. It's just the player isn't very good. They spent a lot of money on Max Meyer in terms of his, you know, signing on wages, fee and the wages they've given him. But he doesn't fit in a Roy Hodgson team. So they've kind of shoehorned him in here, there, and everywhere. And they don't play a system that enables him to play the role that he really excelled in at Schalke. Right.
There isn't a number 10 role in this.
Yeah, or a 10 or as a deep-lying playmaker that he also played.
Well, that's just where Milivojevic is doing.
That's the thing. And Milivojevic is more of a defensive-minded. And the two of them, I don't think, are mobile enough to work if Milivojevic plays more advanced.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
For me, the need has to be striker. I mean, you mentioned Benteke there. That move just has not worked out. I'm sure they want it to work out, but they showed in January they needed to bring in somebody. They get Batshuayi, who I will remind everyone again, actually asked to join Tottenham, but Chelsea didn't let him. Hashtag free Batshuayi. I also have been telling people this. If we had gotten Batshuayi in January, we wouldn't have made the Champions League final. Because he would have been the option instead of Llorente. And for as weird and lumbering a player as Llorente is, he's the one that disrupted City and Ajax. But I keep making it about Tottenham during everything, and I'm sorry.
But I think they need a striker. Keep him.
You think they'll just keep him? But I mean, surely I with Batshuayi leaving, then they, just because his loan's going to end, Ooh, Batshuayi up front next year with Tammy Abraham for Chelsea? Didn't really think about that. But anyway, who's the big lad they got in last January? I forget his name. But he was like basically a Nordic Benteke analog. I don't think that's the answer. So you even if you're planning on keeping Benteke, don't you have to bring in somebody else in case? Because those months where it was a front two of Townsend and Zaha did not go well for Palace.
No. No, and it takes away what makes Zaha a good player and Townsend
a player
who can do good things. He's an average player who can do good things, and they both do that when they're wide cutting in, not when they start infield, and then when they roam, they end up too wide, because neither of them are natural wingers. Both of them play inverted. Neither of them are particularly good at crossing the ball when inverted. If they played as traditional wingers, they could play good ball, but they don't. I mean, if they wanted, they could give Liverpool a fortune for Champions League final hero, Divock Origi. 40 million, I think it's fair.
I'm going to be honest with you. Belgian strikers hasn't really worked out for Palace.
Yeah, but listen, just because the first two didn't work doesn't mean the third one. Like, if I was them, I would try and keep Batshuayi. I think he's a player that will score a lot of goals, but their fortunes are going to live and die with Wilfred Zaha. If he stays, if they force him to stay because they won't accept a realistic offer, which would be somewhere in the 35 to 40 million pound range, if they won't accept that and they force him to stay, is he going to stay bought in and locked in the way he was for large parts of this season? Or is he going to sulk and, you know, throw the toys? Because if he does that, you might as well just not have him. They need to find a striker, and they need goals from midfield as well. Open play goals from midfield. Someone who's going to make continuous runs into the box. As you mentioned with Arsenal earlier on, just someone to do that Aaron Ramsey thing where you don't have a whole lot of involvement in like the middle third of the play, like most midfielders would, but you kind of come alive in the penalty area and you make your runs and you time things. If they could find someone who could give them that, maybe Adam Lallana. I don't think much of him, but he might fit well into that kind of role for them. But a striker has to be the big need.
Yeah, absolutely agreed from me as well. Did you give him a grade?
Yeah, I would give them a C minus, but I'm tempted to give them a D just because of, you know, Hodgson.
Yeah.
But the fact that Wan-Bissaka established himself, I think that's that alone, even if they'd finished 17th, having a kid like that come in and make that position his own and reach the level he did, I think that's huge. I think that's, for a club there like them, I think that's as good as finishing 8th or 9th, you know, because that secures their future. That's 50 million they're going to bring in for him in the next couple of years.
Yeah, definitely very good news for Palace fans there. Next up, just because we've chosen to do one on one off, we're going to have a Liverpool guest on talking about Everton. So I'm sure you will have fun, but they might not.
My favorite club. Oh, Lord. Yeah, a kind of a mixture for the Ev this season. Finished 8th, obviously. At times looked very, very good. At times look like a bunch of players thrown together, which in essence they kind of are, because last summer they kind of threw stuff at the wall and hoped some of it would stick. And some of it did stick. There has been positives from what Everton have done. The bigger positive, though, was the likes of Michael Keane, who came in the previous summer and had that terrible first season, re-establishing himself as a solid Premier League centre-back. Everton, they're not good defensively, they're not good going forward, but they're not bad at either. And you can see that there's potential in the squad to improve in both areas without actually buying anybody. Like, if you look at Yerry Mina, the potential for him to come in next season, hopefully stay fit and establish himself. And then you've got Mina, Keane and Lucas Digne as three quarters of your back four moving forward. Seamus Coleman maybe has another year or two left at a decent level, but they'll want to be looking at a replacement for him. There's talent in that midfield in the likes of Gaye and, you know, Gylfi, you know, and he's a bowler when he's in form. Now, Gomez, who they brought in on loan from Barca, there's talk he wants to join Spurs. There's talk that West Ham want him. It does look like he will stay in. I thought in certain games last season, he looked like a player that could really help elevate them to the next level. He could just take over games and control them and do really well. And in other games, he just disappeared. I think that's kind of the issue that's always been the case with him at Valencia, even at Barcelona, and the rare opportunities he got, he was very inconsistent. Inconsistency is the problem there. He doesn't like the physical side of things, really. And if he gets kicked early, he tends to drift out of games. But when you look at the front options, there's talent there for sure. Richarlison, I think they overpaid for him, but he's clearly a player. And Lookman, I've mentioned already, I think he's really, really good. They brought Bernard in. Again, inconsistent, but you can see there's real talent in that player. The problem is they continually go with the likes of Theo Walcott, who's just not very good anymore. Calvert-Lewin, I don't think he's up to much. I'm not sure he's a Premier League player. I think he'd be a very good championship number nine, but I don't think he's a Premier League player. But I think their biggest issue, and Everton fans might not like this, but their biggest issue is their goalkeeper, who's just massively overrated. And he makes a lot of mistakes.
But I think he is now. Do you know what I mean? Like his confidence in certain aspects of his game has clearly dropped, and that position is so reliant on that.
Yeah, I mean, like his confidence in his kicking has dropped, but his kicking was always overrated. People were talking about him like he was Ederson or Alisson, and in truth, he wasn't as good as Hugo Lloris with his kicking. But the fact that he was English and he played that kind of way got overhyped. But as a shot stopper, he makes spectacular saves, but he concedes a lot of goals. And I look at any goalkeeper who concedes as many goals as he has over the last 3 years, and I have to raise questions over, are they actually any good? I think he's a very flashy goalkeeper, but I just don't think the substance is there. I think there's concentration issues, there's positional issues. He is as bad a goalkeeper as there is in the Premier League on crosses. And if his kicking's not up to scratch, I wonder what he's actually offering them. So for me, if the rumours of De Gea wanting to leave United and United wanting to buy Pickford are true, Everton should encourage that and they should sell him. But they need a goalkeeper, I think, who's going to be solid for them, and they need to find a third attacker who fits with what should be Lookman and Richarlison in the front three and will add more goals. Like, they've been linked with Memphis Depay and they've been linked with Chucky Lozano. So they are targeting the right type of players.
I think it'd be hard for them to get either of them, though.
Yeah, of course, because with the greatest respect, they're Champions League players and Everton aren't a Champions League club. But if they could go and find, you know, the next Memphis or the next Chucky Lozano, and maybe get them in before they have that in-between move. I mean, the ideal buy for them would actually be Wilfred Zaha. And it's the ideal move for him because it is a step up from Palace, regardless of, you know, any kind of laughing at Everton. Everton are a bigger club than Crystal Palace. They've got better players than Crystal Palace. They've got a bigger budget than Crystal Palace, and they've got bigger ambitions than Crystal Palace. It's just that, like I say, he's a 35 to 40 million pound player. And if they could get him for that, and you bring him in and you play him on the left, Lookman on the right, and Richarlison to the middle, that's a really nice front three. You play Gylfi in behind them, Gaye and Gomez in midfield, Digne and Coleman as the fullbacks. All of a sudden, you're looking at a really good team. But Zaha is going to cost something stupid because Palace are Palace. So, you know, who's the next best option for them? That's what they need to go and find. Someone to do that role who can score goals and be a wide creator. there's definitely a lot for Everton fans to be positive about, but this summer they need to have real focus and they can't just go with the scattergun approach that they have over the last couple of windows. Overall grade for the season, C-, because I think the fact they finished below Wolves will be a big blow to their confidence.
Yeah, I agree. They were always supposed to be the kind of leading the rest of the pack team. But, you know, Everton didn't have the results against the big teams that Wolves had. I mean, freaking Tottenham didn't have the results against big teams that Wolves had this season. But I'm really glad you asked that because it begs the question, if we both think Chelsea are going to drop out of the top four, definitely top six, probably, do you think Everton are in with a shot of getting into those European places?
I would put them below Wolves and maybe Leicester in my ranking for the to be the one to jump in.
That's Leicester without Tielemans?
Yes.
Okay.
Without Tielemans, yeah.
Interesting.
Because I think, well, we'll get to them, but I just think there's more talent at Leicester. I'm not sure who the better manager is between Silva and the Brodge, but I think there's more talent and more consistency at Leicester.
There's a more clear vision at Leicester, that's for sure.
For sure, yeah. And I think a higher ceiling as well on the younger players they have there than on the ones at Everton.
Mm. Yeah, I'd agree. Like Dina and you mentioned Gomez and Mina, they're all a little bit older. Like they've already filled some of that potential, especially Gomez, who I think is like 28 now.
28, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, has developed well, developed more this year than I think either of us thought he would. We both kind of thought he wouldn't really make it in the Premier League, but he had a good season. But yeah, I agree that there is far more gap between ability and potential at Leicester right now. All right, next we'll move on to Fulham. And there was discussion at the start of the season about both Fulham and Wolves spending so much money. Both of them had a chance to finish in the top 10, and their seasons went about as differently as two clubs from the Championship could have had. Well, Wolves, like we mentioned, were beating all of the big boys in every competition. All four European finalists were beaten by Wolves this season. Just an absurd stat. Fulham, on the other hand, decided to have all of their summer signings not pan out even a little bit at all. The only player that performed to or above their ability level was Callum Chambers this season. That was it. The only one. Everyone else underperformed. You can blame the transfer strategy, and we did over the summer. But just on sheer numbers, some of these players should have stepped up. Mitrovic, Schürrle, and Sarri, I think, are the triumvirate that deserve the most blame for what happened this season. Mitrovic started the season well, but did not score for most of the second half and demands you play to him, both tactically and personally. Sessegnon struggled in what was his first, but surely not last season at the club. Anguissa was awful. Mawson was hurt. Who was the left back that they got in because they weren't able to keep hold of Matty Target?
Le Marchand?
No, but Le Marchand was also awful. I forget who it was. Brian, maybe? I don't remember. But anyway, the point is, they were all supremely awful. They brought in three goalkeepers. None of them could keep shots out of the goal. It just was a very, very impressive failure on just all fronts. They went through three managers again, Dave. They did this the last time they were up, and they were like, it worked out well last time, so let's do that again this season. They end on Scotty Parker, who I personally do not think is the answer. And they go down with one of the worst defenses in history. Just managed to save it at the end to not be literally the worst of all time. It'll be interesting to see how they recover in the Championship. We already kind of buried the lead here by saying that we both think Cardiff are more set up for Championship success right now. I don't know which players have Championship clauses in their contracts in terms of reducing that wage bill. You can't keep most of those players that you bought last year that disappointed. Not many of them are going to stick in the Premier League after the campaigns they just had. Like Dave, you and I talked about Tottenham and Liverpool's interest in Sarri when he was being courted by Barcelona 2 years ago. The concern was with his feet. I forget what the condition is, but apparently it hurts to move on your feet, which is an issue.
Something to do with ingrown toenails or something.
Yeah. So it was a little bit of a surprise that he ended up going to Fulham. But, you know, only four-ish of the months of the season are in those conditions. So where was he the rest of the year? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who's going to stick. I don't know who's not going to stick. I don't know who the manager is long-term, because I really don't think it's going to be Parker for more than a season, if even that long. The direction is so unclear for me, and I think that's why we're both thinking Cardiff are a step ahead, is because they were planning for the championship last year in the Premier League. So I just think they're a little bit more set up. But I don't think we'll see them in the Premier League in 2020, 2021, but we will see. Again, F for the grade. Of course it is. It has to be. Biggest need for me is the right manager, which we talked about earlier as well. And then a winger, because half of them were on loan. Markovic did nothing of note. Babel, I think that was a loan as well. Showed up well when he was there, but he'll be gone.
No, six-month contract.
Oh, was it?
They actually signed him on a six-month contract. Oh, same, same, I think, as Markovic.
Oh, interesting. Oh, right, because they were both on the release list, huh?
Yeah.
And then who was the guy they got from Atleti that was supposed to matter and then didn't at all?
Oh, the little Argentinian kid.
Mm-hmm.
Christ, I can't think of his name.
Can't remember. That's how much of an impact he had this year.
Yeah.
And on the other side, you have Sessegnon, who is all but gone, probably to Tottenham. We've discussed him almost every window.
Just now, he's not going to Tottenham.
Oh, really?
No.
Hmm. All right.
He probably is, but...
but you just want to say no.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, we've just been after him for so long, and now that the price is going to come down because he didn't have a great season and because they're going down to the championship, it's hard to not see, and we need him at both positions he can play. Although I will say everybody that was saying he wouldn't be a left-back long... Well, I don't want to say that. That's overly harsh. I don't know what his best position is anymore. Last year, it looked 100% clear that he was a winger. Then in that role this season, he did not shine per se. Still led them in assists with six.
I think he's a left back. And even in the championship, when he was the best player in the championship, he played most of his games at left back.
Well, it was like at a wing back thing, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but he was still playing as a left back. Like, wing back, left back is the same thing. You're still especially asking these the same things.
Yeah.
He is a left back who can cover in attack. And we need him as well, because our first choice left back went to... left-back target went to Bournemouth. Mm. And we've wanted him for just as long, and he's a Liverpool fan, and his agent's a Liverpool fan. So let's not get ahead of yourself there. You won't have a clear run at him. But anyway, here's the thing, Kev. If you ask me to say right now what will Fulham's first 11 be on opening day, like if you ask me for Cardiff's first 11 on opening day...
You got like eight of them, plus.
Yeah, that's it. 8, 9, maybe even 10 of them. With Fulham, I couldn't tell you one name who'll be on the team sheet. Not a single one. Don't have a clue. They're in
Kearney.
An absolute mess. Probably. Yeah, probably. Yeah, but he might stay in the Premier League because Norwich like him. So he might end up getting picked up. They're a mess. And the problem they have is that they signed a lot of big money players on big wages. And yeah, they might have relegation release clauses, but relegation release clauses require a club to come in and say, okay, well, we'll pay that. I don't know that many clubs will be willing to come in for Seri and say, pay 15 million based on what you saw last year. Like, there's not many clubs in France that could afford that. The top clubs in Spain, Germany, Italy, and England won't want him. Haven't seen how he was last year. Not a lot of Premier League clubs will want him. So I don't know. I think they're going to have a really tough time rectifying the mess that they made. Like, they bought a lot of players. Luciano Vietto is the name of that Argentinian kid.
Yeah, well done.
He's not a kid anymore. He's 25. but they bought good players with no real plan of how to fit them all in together. And as the manager they had...
It was a FIFA window.
Pretty much, yeah. It was like, okay, I need a centre midfielder. So hang on, let me just Google FIFA 18 central midfielders. Oh, look at this guy. He'll do. Yeah, that'll do. Oh, he's a defensive midfielder. And the other midfielder I bought is a deep-lying playmaker and they want to play in the same position. Oh dear, now what will I do? Oh, they both used to play in 4-3-3. We're going to stick it in 4-4-2 and it'll be fine. Because it's FIFA, that does work. In reality, it doesn't. I don't know what they're going to do. You're completely right. The biggest need for them is a manager. Like, Ranieri was a terrible appointment. And in typical Claudio fashion, when it went even from bad to worse, he ran away because it's what he's always done. Somehow this man has managed to continue to get jobs. His only career success is a fluke title win at Leicester, which is a magnificent success nonetheless. But he's a charlatan. He's a cowboy. And I would be horrified if my club even considered him. I don't know what the future holds for Fulham, but it doesn't look too bright.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be concerning. And apologies to Russ, because I know we listened to one of these and was pretty upset. I think it was the summer one when we were like, I don't think this summer is going to pan out. And I honestly wish it had worked out. I like Fulham as a club. I've actually been to Craven Cottage. They're fine. I don't
love the
really
stadium, love the club, love
don't love
the fans.
The owner, I'll say. I've been critical of him since that season he took over and took them down for the first time. But the rest of it, yeah, totally agree. Also, the walk to the stadium's quite lovely down the river. But
it's the Khan family, isn't it?
Yeah, Shahid Khan. Yeah.
Shahid Khan, yeah.
The Jaguars owner.
Yeah, and he's the guy that started that new wrestling promotion, AEW.
Hmm.
Made money selling tools.
Interesting.
The only other thing I don't like about Fulham is they once erected a statue for Michael Jackson.
Ah, that's true.
Which... questionable, to say the least.
Yep. All right. Then we'll move on to Huddersfield. Just wasn't very much of a participant in this year's Premier League. Is that too harsh? Who knows? Dave, what did you make of it?
Jesus. you just feel sorry for them. But look, no one ever expected them to come up. No one expected them to stay up. And then we all expect them to go down. Once they got their second season in the Premier League, I think last summer we were all just kind of like, this will be it for them, and then they will go. And look, they should enjoy every moment of what they've had over the last 2 years. Embrace it all, because no one ever thought you'd manage it. It was great to see them come up, to see them stay up. I thought Wagner did a great job. It obviously just tailed off for him and he couldn't do any more. He's now moved on. I think there's enough good things put in place from his tenure that they can, rebuild and perhaps come back up. I don't like the choice of manager they made to replace him. I think they just kind of tried to repeat the same trick of, well, oh, this guy was reserve team manager of Dortmund at one point, so let's just go and pluck him.
Yeah.
I thought they were pretty close to a disgrace second half of the season in terms of, from a Premier League point of view. The games weren't even competitive for the most part. They were just sending lads out to try and see what they had. There's a couple of good players there, but I think most of them will probably move on this summer. There's some good young players there. The Akabi is one I really like.
Yeah.
I really like Billing as well, but it sounds like he's going to be on the move. They've already gotten rid of Lossell, which was a strange one because he kept them up, was key to keeping them up in the first season, dropped off last season, but you wouldn't have said was entirely to blame, and then just gets released as soon as the season's over, which seems strange to me considering I think they signed him on a 3-year contract last summer. To then just bin him after 1 year was odd. Eric Durham has also left the club, and he was one that they were kind of very excited to get in. De Potre has left the club as well, also released.
And Mounier will certainly go back to France and score like 10 goals, and then somebody else will try to buy him again.
Someone else will pay 14 or 15 million. I think Aaron Moy is one that will definitely stay in the Premier League. Yeah. I think he showed such a unique player ID. Yeah, exactly. Could be a nice fit actually at Brighton with some of the midfielders they have there.
Yeah.
Not unexpected that they've gone down. It's an F grade, obviously, because they got relegated. But they've got big decisions to make for the future. Number one is, are they going to stick with this manager? If they are they going to actually back him? And who else do they like? They have needs throughout. They need, like, you can't imagine Zanke is going to stay there. What is he, 28 now?
Yeah. Although he did regress this year as well. He's one of those players where when you're looking at the relegated players, you're like, who contributed to the downfall? Because you know he's not innocent. He does not have clean hands from this season. He is part of the reason why they struggled so much.
No, but you could imagine a number of mid-table clubs in Germany liking a back like him, or perhaps he'll go back to Denmark. And you know, there's going to be Champions League clubs in some of the lesser leagues that would like a player like him, and he would probably.
I could see him being picked up by a Jupiler League team or something.
Yeah, exactly. Something like Anderlecht might very much, or could Ajax like him if they sell on De Ligt and maybe want an experienced head at centre back?
Yeah, they've been willing to bring in older players of late, and it clearly worked this season.
Yeah, so I mean, he'll definitely get offers, and I'd imagine he doesn't want to be playing championship football at this point in his career. So you'd expect him to go. So they need a centre back anyway. They'll probably need two. You'd imagine Kongolo will go because he's on good wages. As I said, Moy will go. So there's going to be, and probably Billing. There'll be a couple of midfielders needed. Mounier, as you said, he's definitely going. At a loss, at a probably a big loss, but so
they just couldn't afford to whiff on him, and they sure did.
Yeah, that's it. They did big time, and that's really what killed them is they just couldn't score goals because they had spells where defensively they were quite good. But they were losing games 1-0 and 2-0, because they just couldn't score goals. So you'd have to imagine they'll have to address throughout the team. They need a new spine: goalkeeper, centre backs, midfield, and attack. So. A lot of work to be done.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, not this past summer window, but the one before, both Huddersfield and Brighton were in for Janssen on deadline day. Both of them should have done it. The end. Anyway, we will take a break here. So thanks to Dave for coming on. Tell the folks where they can find you.
Anfield Index, anfieldindex.com, Anfield Index Pro. We have an app. You can subscribe to our Liverpool-based podcast. It's £5 a month or £40 for the year, so you get 2 months free. Lots and lots of great content. Lots of unique content as well. There's a lot of tactical-based stuff. We've got the Under Pressure pod, which is groundbreaking statistical analysis. Been quoted in university lecturers. It's been quoted in the Sunday Times on countless occasions by Jonathan Northcote, who is a Liverpool covering journalist who's also an AI Pro subscriber. We have things like the Fatigue Index with Simon Brundish and Marty Loughran, where they look at physical loading on players and marginal gains, things like that. Fascinating stuff. We've got Mindfield podcast, which is two professional sports psychologists talking about the effects of different things on players. Money Talks with Mo Chatra. Mo Chatra, for those that don't know, is a financial wizard. He was the first person anywhere to expose the cheating going on in Manchester City. And he was ridiculed for it. And now all those people are kissing his ass and asking to come on his podcast and talk about it. So, yeah, lots and lots of really diverse stuff. And we've got a weekly podcast with Kenny Dalglish as well, which no one else is offering and no one else ever will offer because Kenny only likes the best. So he's with AI Pro.
Yeah, certainly. If you're a Liverpool fan, you have to check it out. And even if you're not, our stuff is on there. And I know there's some other non-Liverpool content. They've got comics and movies and all kinds of stuff like that over there as well. So if that tickles your fancy, check that out. Dave, an absolute pleasure. In reality, we're going to take a 5-minute break and then record the second half. But we're going to do the facade of exiting. So, Dave, it was lovely speaking with you.
A pleasure as always, Kev.
Thanks for listening. And we hope you keep tuning in to EPL Roundtable.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.